Hey, y'all. Welcome to the People Purpose Podcast, a show that explores all the ins and outs, challenges and opportunities HR people managers, and of course, all people face at work every single day. My name is Chaz Fields. I'm one of your co-hosts, joined by my workplace bestie and co-host,
Julie Devlin. Hi, everybody. Sorry about my voice. It sounds like I've lost it, doesn't it?
I don't know. You've been out too late, Jules.
You've just been out. Oh yeah, you know much. Me. Yeah. Huge partier. Yeah.
Hey, Jules. What's on your mind?
Oh man, what's on my mind? I've had a good opportunity the past several days, weeks to spend a lot of time out on the West Coast, and I just want to say how nice people are out on the West Coast. I think people are, like it's interesting traveling as much as we do and getting to meet getting to see different areas of the country, having that privilege is amazing. And you just get to understand how geography and weather and beautiful views affect people's mentality and like how nice they are. I don't know. Not saying that everybody doesn't have a bad day every once in a while and like it's all utopian, but I don't know. That's what's on my mind. It's just, it's like a good vibe. On the West Coast.
That's very West Coast of you now.
West Coast. Yeah. hang 10, you know, peace and love, like all of that.
Did you go surfing or walk the beach?
No, the water here is very, very cold.
So you have walked the beach or been near the beach?
I went to the beach. Yes, I was on the beach. But it was part of a hike. So, but there are a lot of people who surf you have to wear like a full wetsuit. And I will say, I think there are a lot of sharks out here. So I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, hard pass. I'm good. I'm good on that. Right.
Yeah, totally.
I'm good on that. So here's the deal. What's on my mind. Do you see this sick hoodie, by the way?
Yes. Very sick cool.
Big fan of this hoodie. And shout out to our friends at Overture who sent this to me. I did not expect this. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very grateful for it's one of those hoodies. And I need to take you back here because everyone has that one hoodie or sweatshirt that's just right. Like you just put it on. I have one from high school that I still have. It's an Indiana Hoosiers one that I still have that I wear every single morning. And this one is like when that one goes, this one will be the new one.
Really?
Because Julie, it's so good. It's soft. It's baggy in the right places. Mm. It's warm and cool. It's a moderate climate sweatshirt, you know?
It doesn't take much.
I'm a simple man, Julie. I'm a simple man.
I know.
But that's not why we're here to hear about my comfy roomy hoodie. It is because we have a business side of the day. So as we do in every episode, we like to start with kind of the preface and where we want this conversation to go. So you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Breath in. Should we do like some breathing exercises? I don't know.
It is early where I am, but that's okay.
It is. So globally, the employee engagement rate is only 21%. Okay. And 33% of workers thrive in their overall well-being. So let me rephrase. Globally, the employee engagement rate is only 21%. Let's start there. First thoughts.
I have trouble with engagement. I have trouble. The more and more I dive into HR stuff and learn more about workplace trends and see the trends that are coming down the pike, you know, all these employee engagement, employee experience, very, very important, but I don't know that we necessarily look at them in the right ways. Because I've said this before about engagement, like we as organizations spend a lot of time assuring engagement rather than improving it. And like, it's a continuous thing. So, but also like it's a continuous thing in trying to get employees to be quote unquote engaged, whatever that looks like for your workforce. What is engagement for your workforce? What is engagement for your workers? Because I think engagement for a white collar employee may be different than engagement for a blue collar employee, may be different than engagement for somebody who's making six figures versus someone who's not. It's like, it's again, like what fills the cup of your employees? And we have to get there. We have to get to a point where we understand that on a human level.
Right.
And recognize that not everybody is going to be engaged at work in the same way.
It's funny you bring that up because I just Googled definitions of engage, right? I Googled all the, and for the record, there were five that popped up immediately, which already tells me engagement is a very complicated thing. Yeah. Right. And that's where my head goes. And Gallup did the survey, and where my head goes when it comes to being engaged, similar to what you said, very individualistic. Right. And if I look at the terms of some of these definitions, occupy, attract, or involve, right? I'm just placing keywords here, participate or become involved in, mm-hmm. arrange to employ or hire somebody, right? Same thing as, you know, engage for marriage, pledge or enter into a contract to do something. Now, if we want to talk about like engagement from that definition, if you mm-hmm. signed a contract agreement with your company, a hiring contract, and you're doing your job, you're technically engaged if you're doing said job.
According to
the definition, right? Yes, to the textbook definition. It is broader than that. So
yeah, but you said a word in that other definition. What did you say it for the first? It was
participate or become involved in, occupy, attract, or involve someone's interest or attention.
Okay.
And then the next one was participate or become involved in, establish a meaningful contact or connection with
them. I think, for me, it was the participate and become involved in, because here's the thing. And this is an age old argument. Should we be expecting employees to participate in after hours work activities, social events, that kind of stuff that are sponsored by the organization? Take alcohol out of it. Not saying that these are drinking events or anything, just events in general. Like, I don't know. Should we be expecting?
You struggle with that a little bit, right?
And if we don't see our employees there, does that mean they're not engaged, or does that just mean that they have other priorities?
I think that it's a blend of both, right? Because you have people who want to keep life and work very, very separate. Right. Mm-hmm. I am one of those individuals. It doesn't mean I don't enjoy going to those work functions. It doesn't mean that I don't want to go to some of those work functions. Right. There are just times that I would rather be at home or be somewhere that doesn't require me to participate in those events. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Right. Because if we are creating the culture that we want everyone to thrive in, we just have to have the mutual understanding that no, they just didn't want to, and that's okay, right? On the flip side, I also have to recognize that there are times where I need to participate in team activities for the better of the team and for myself to make sure that we still have that team feel, if you will. So it's mm-hmm. I think it's both or all, if you will, but it doesn't mean that you are less disengaged because you didn't show up to the happy hour, right? You know, to the company sponsored happy hour. I don't think that's fair for people. Do you?
No, it's not fair, but that doesn't mean that perception isn't there.
Fair.
Yeah. Fair. I mean, perception, you know, what?
I was going to say, like, we could take a whole nother episode on like employee perception and team perception. There's another episode. Put a quarter in the bucket, Jules. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But here's the deal. I think with what we're kind of setting the stage for is this is going to be a two-part series where when we think about need, right, and we go from engagement to multiple definitions where we've got to do all of these things to make sure employees are engaged, I think we've been talking about the need conversation not in the wrong way, but not necessarily in the light that it should be. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about, you know, hey, there are some different things that we can do for employee needs and meeting those needs in the event of similar to Maslow's hierarchy, which we can talk about here in just a second. But after years and years of research and listening and understanding, we actually know what employees' needs are, physiological and psychological. And do you just want to highlight real quick, like Maslow's, just so people understand the framework of where we get to employee continuum of needs.
Yeah, there's, first of all, you know, a lot of us in school learned about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, motivational theory, that really it's a five-tier model of human needs. And if you think about that triangle of what's on that need, you know, you have your basic needs and then your safety needs and your belongingness and your esteem, and then that self-actualization where you get to a point where you're, it's like nirvana of life, right? It's very difficult to get there, but we do have moments in our lives where we do reach that period of self-actualization, according to Maslow. I learned about these needs theories, expectancy theories, you know, motivation theories in my organizational development class in grad school. I remember learning about all of them and not understanding them at all. And then when I got into the workforce and I was able to actually apply these things that I've learned, that I learned in school, I was like, oh, now that makes sense. You have to put so many of these things, they're just arbitrary. But when you put them within the framework of an organization, and it's specifically within the framework of what your organization is experiencing or going through, it can help you to understand a little bit better. So we're looking at five levels of hierarchies: physiological, safety, love, belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. And, you know, over the years, I think there's been a lot of folks who have worked to debunk this Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It is a very antiquated model. You're going to say something.
I don't think you can. I mean, you can try and debunk it all you want, but I think source wise, like I think about the physiological, we know we need food, water, warmth, and rest, right? Mm-hmm. How do you debunk that?
Well, you don't debunk that.
That's my point.
But there's other, but when you take all of these things together, right? There are certain things that, like, for example, yes, we do all have those physiological needs for sure, right? Mm-hmm. But that esteem needs, for example, that feeling of prestige and feeling accomplished, mm-hmm. you know, what that means to me may be different than what that means to you. So where does that fall on my level of the needs, right? I guess there's all needs there, those needs are always there, but in terms of where they fall on
the hierarchy.
Yeah, on the hierarchy.
So it's a sliding scale for you. If that makes sense, like you could move it up or down based on the timing versus stating that it isn't an actual need. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. And we're not going to debate Maslow, right? No. We're not going to debate the theory here today, but you know, I think that, I don't know. There's other theories. McClellan's achievement motivation theory is one that I think of. I think of where basically, so McClellan, oh my gosh, if I remember. McClellan is it's like you strive for excellence against the standard or something, and you're in a competition with yourself. It's like this achievement motivation theory.
Three driving factors.
I'm just trying to remember
achievement, affiliation, or power, right?
Yeah.
The need for achievement, affiliation, or power. That's the motivation theory for that one.
Yeah. And these theories
are theories.
Excuse me. These what?
Are theories.
No, well, they're theories, but they expand on Maslow.
Yeah.
You know, Hertzberg's motivation hygiene theory, I think, is another one that I think about. And then Vroom's expectancy theory.
Yeah. I was wondering if you're gonna bring that one up.
So this is like, oh my gosh, I can't even remember Vroom's expectancy theory, but basically I think like we assume more effort will result in better results. So like if we put more effort in, then we expect that those results are going to be there.
Yeah.
There's like a direct alignment with like what you're doing and where what you're doing will take you in terms of the goal. It's way more complicated than probably we want to get into now, but why does this matter, Chaz?
Because the workplace is a tad different in comparison to Maslow, right? Mm-hmm. There are some similarities. However, there is this idea that when you walk through the doors of your workplace or fire up your laptop, if you work remote, that there's somewhat of a different set of needs that we expect from organizations. Mm-hmm. Right. And what I want to do is I want to talk through kind of some of our research and how over the years we've looked at it differently, and how people have evolved side by side with the workplace, outside of the workplace, and, you know, kind of what we're experiencing even in today's workplace, that it's ever so changing, right? So part one of this series, we're just going to focus on three areas of the employee continuum of needs. Mm-hmm. And then let's just talk about them, Jules, our experience or others' experience. Maybe, you know, people can comment or, you know, put in the video or whatever they're watching this to say, hey, look, I can relate to that. Right. Or mm-hmm. I had this experience. I don't know if we want to do that on LinkedIn, but we can absolutely publish it on LinkedIn.
Yeah. But if they're if they're needs, then everybody should be able to relate.
I would think so. Right? I would think so. Right. So tell us the first one.
Well, the three that we want to look at today is survival, security, relationships, starting with the first one, survival, safe and ergonomically sound working environment. I think of ergonomically sound, I'm like, and I think, oh, I wonder if people have a nice chair. And the promise of continued employment, you know, that survival thing, I think in today's world, is very difficult, especially with the reductions in force that we're seeing in a lot of organizations and, just some of the negativity that you read online and everything. I guess the question would become, are you providing the survival feeling to your employees?
You know? You highlight safe and ergonomically sound working environment and promise of continued employment. And I know you've heard me say this, it's very hard to guarantee employment. Right. Most companies, it's very hard to say you
unless you're in a union.
Right. Right. And
or I mean, a tenured professor. It's tomorrow. Very difficult. Yeah.
Right. Like there are circumstances, however, where we could be better about this is making sure that employees feel that they're contributing and mm-hmm. that they are providing value that leads to that sense of security for employment. The question becomes, if you are doing this, how do you know, right? How's it working? And, you know, there are things like sentiment surveys, better one-on-ones, being proactive versus reactive that we can do this. Now, safety is a whole nother element, right? Like, do you provide the sense of safety when people come to work? I've been in a lot of facilities, Julie, that there are a lot of people that don't necessarily feel safe.
Oh yeah. Right. I mean, especially you take the professions that are dangerous and right. I think, you know, thank God we have OSHA, HR people are saying, what do you mean? You know, we have OSHA. OSHA is a bane of a lot of people's existence, but it's necessary, right?
That's right.
And, you know, OSHA came about many, 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 many years ago. If you think about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, right, led to the rise of the movement to make a physically safe workplace. But that's a whole other conversation. I think, at a basic level, safety of workers, you read horror stories all the time about people who unfortunately have lost their lives on the job or people who, you know, work in industries where maybe they don't have the kind of safety security equipment that they need based upon budgets and all of that kind of stuff, which money shouldn't be a factor with that.
Yeah. I remember in construction, we had near miss reports that had to be filled out if someone got, I mean, and it's,
I'm sure it's horrifying to what the near misses were.
You have no idea.
Did they involve saws?
Listen, I'm going to spare the Hollywood version of the mm-hmm. horror that can come from a construction site, but it really is terrifying to know that people show up to something like a construction site or an environment to not feel physically safe. But then there's also, you know, the emotional side too, which is the number two, the security category, right? And what this is compensation and benefits. Duh. We know people want comp and benefits, right? Mm-hmm. And that provides a sense of security. Not going to spend any time on that. But then there's the emotional safety and security. Mm-hmm. Right. And then treated respectfully and being heard. Now, we could spend an hour and a half on just key words when it comes to respect and being heard. But I do want to talk about the respect thing. How do we as people leaders measure respect?
How do we measure it?
Yeah, and maybe it's not a measure, but
can you measure respect? I don't know that you can measure respect. I mean, we can't survey and say, do you respect me? And then have like, and have that measurement, because respect will change on if respect varies, it varies in situations, right. It varies with different types of leaders. It varies between employees, between mm-hmm. individuals. The definition mm-hmm. of respect likely is different based upon your upbringing, based upon your socioeconomic condition, based upon a lot of different things. Right. But you know, man, respect, what does it mean for one to feel respected at work? I think we can take it from a different level where we go, okay, well, to be respected at work or to feel respected, you have to feel like you're valued. Okay. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for you to feel like you're valued? I feel like every time we get to one of these places, it just adds more questions to it. Yeah.
The similar term is like showing regard for the other individual, right? And, you know, admire deeply is one of the other pieces of this definition, as a result of their abilities, qualities, or achievements, which is probably closest to the workplace mm-hmm. when it comes to this. My thought process is, if we don't hear people, then we know they're not respected, which is why I like this category. If we don't provide the sense of them feeling heard, or the person sitting across from feeling heard, then we know they don't feel respected, which I believe, if you work backwards in this, doesn't necessarily provide a sense of security, where it's, hey, did you actually understand what I said? Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, did you listen?
Right. And did you listen? And then that goes back to the sense of feeling heard and being able to converse about this. So the overarching framework of this, in my opinion, is the respect, but you have to do the right things right, treating someone like a human before they're actually going to feel respected. And here's the thing, you have some people who say respect is earned, right? And then you have other individuals who say, no, respect is given. Some would say it's a blended approach, right? Why should I not respect you even though I don't know you? There's that camp, right? So it's a delicate balance, but if we want to do our best for our employees, then we need to really uncover that sense of respect and how people get there to drive that sense of security. Does that make sense?
Well, we need to understand what employees feel respect means to them on an Correct. Individual level. One of the things that teams may want to do is have that discussion, you know, have that discussion openly. What does it mean mm-hmm. for you to feel respected? And mm-hmm. you can even take that more granularly and say, what does it mean for you to feel respected in your job here at our organization? Yep. Because again, you know, respect from a familial level may be different than respect from an employment level.
There's a lot of truth there, right?
But the overarching thing about all of this, and something that we have to remember, is that this is about emotion. And we've said it before that there are so many times here where people don't remember what you say to them, but they remember how they made you feel. And that's going to stick with people way more than the words. And by the way, once respect is lost, mm-hmm. very difficult to get back, because there's a direct correlation between respect, feeling respected, and trust. And we know that trust is the foundation of all things at work and really mm-hmm. in life for many different relationships, which I guess is a good segue into the next one, right?
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal. All of these are tied together, which is why they work together so beautifully. And Julie said it, relationships, right? So mm-hmm. so what we know that employees need are healthy relationships at work, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly with their supervisor, and company reputation, which also leads opportunity to lead or serve others. Okay. Now this, I want to talk about this last piece, opportunity to lead or serve others. Mm-hmm. All right. So from the perspective of a team, not everyone can be managers. Not everyone can climb the hierarchical ladder. Right. Mm-hmm. However, even as an individual contributor, you can both lead and serve others. And I will tell you, Julie, I think Serve has gotten a bad rap over the years where it's like, well, why would I want to serve you? That's, you know, we don't do that. And I struggle with that because if I am able to serve, that means that I have the willingness to do something different or to challenge myself to do something that other people aren't. Right. And instead of looking at serve as a negative thing, maybe the next person doesn't want to be a manager and they still want to lead and they still want to have influence. And a lot of that comes from the servitude lens and action. What are your thoughts on that?
What do you mean by serve? I need to understand what serve means to you.
Yeah. So I think it's the commitment to the business and being willing to do things that sometimes you're not necessarily comfortable with, or to extend a branch to in a situation that you may not want to do, right? Serving, in my opinion, is also a driving factor of loyalty and commitment, where if you're asked to do a project that may not fall exactly in the realm of what you do, but your manager knows it's going to challenge you and it's going to be better for the business. Like that's an act of service, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing with volunteering. You know, you may not want to go volunteer. You know, it's the right thing to do. And then you don't want to do it, but then you go do it and then you find fulfillment, right? Where it's like, oh, wow. I think that's how I look at servitude. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I always struggle with the term servant leader. I hear it all the time.
Really?
Yeah, not
we should
struggle.
Do an episode on that.
Yeah, but not struggle in like a bad way. It's like I don't know what does it mean to be a servant leader. Yeah, that's another episode, but that's a whole other conversation for a different day. But you know, from this perspective of relationships, you know, healthy relationships at work, particularly with a supervisor, I think. Well, on the employee continuum of needs here, like this is probably more important than some, I would say, right? Because again, your experience at work or the way that you feel about your job, your manager has a direct impact on that. I think, you know, if we have different managers, we may have different experiences, and that's just how it is. No, regardless of how fantastically wonderful a company culture is overall, your day to day with the people that you work with and with the people who you're getting the job done with or not, they're going to make the biggest difference in terms of your experience because that's what you're dealing with on a day to day basis.
Yeah, we should probably do an episode on how to build healthy relationships in the workplace. Like just the perspective of you and I, where it's like you were the new hire. I had been here a while. And like, how did we come to fruition of doing a podcast together and like how we work together, you know, through autonomy and all this stuff? Because it does take a lot of work that people don't necessarily talk about where you and I could completely disagree, but how do we work through those disagreements and make sure that we do what's best for not only ourselves and UKG? And what I will tell you is sometimes it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, build a healthy relationship. Great. Like, do I ask them their favorite color?
Right. Well, right. But healthy relationship starts with respect and starts with trust. And
That's right.
It also starts with communication and getting elephants in the room out of, you know, before, you know, in those conversations before any problem.
Can't be afraid of conflict, right?
No,
I think healthy relationship, you can't be afraid of conflict.
So we're gonna be talking more about this as we move forward. Right, Chaz, another episode.
We got the other three after this.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyways, what'd you find your purpose in?
Oh, wow. gosh, I forgot that we have to answer that.
Episode 77.
Yeah. Julie. Right. What did I find my purpose in today? That what I learned in college, really is important. And, the hierarchy of needs, Maslow and Hertzberg and Vroom's expectancy theory all will come back to haunt me one day. So if people tell you that you'll never use algebra, that is likely true. But don't let them.
However,
tell you that you'll never have to talk about Hertzberg
Psychology every day in the workplace.
Absolutely.
Psychology every day in the workplace. No, it's so funny you bring that up because that was mine. I literally had a conversation yesterday with a colleague that talked about, you know, we have to recall things that we learned in the past. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is a prime example. I think that's my thing is maybe I should have paid a little more attention in college. However, what are some things that I've forgotten about over the years that I should go back and kind of reinvest in and make sure that I'm staying on track with messaging and helping others? I think that's the key. And of course, trying to help organizations meet their employees' needs because it ain't easy, y'all. It ain't easy. So, Jules, you want to close us out?
Yeah, don't forget, like, subscribe, use the hashtag PeoplePurposePods on social media sites like LinkedIn and all those other social media sites.
There's so many.
And check out all the latest research at the Workforce Institute UKG by visiting workforceinstitute.org. So thanks for listening, everybody.
Cheers. Bye.